neću govoriti nešto tamo podlegu. Prije ovo ću opet tamo da gledam.
Sitting at the moment, asking just a little, well, when we're taking lunch or brunch, and he was asking about my association with Srila Prabhupada. And so I mentioned that I think once I counted the number of times that I had been in Prabhupada's presence, and I think it was only about 30 times or so. Although in the last year Prabhupada was on the planet, I used to write him almost every week or every other week, sending reports about a particular service. The service was that we were doing, as was mentioned, we were traveling around the many countries and we were distributing particularly the standing order sets. So I was trying to reflect when I was last here. When we were traveling together, what year was that? Do you recall? 77? 77. It must have been around. And we were in Czechoslovakia.
Czechoslovakia.
My memory is bad. I was asking him, we were traveling together, in which countries? And it was in Austria, East Germany, Czechoslovakia. So that was around 1977. So I assume I was here then, probably sometimes after that, maybe 19 or before. That was 77? Okay, so 77. So that means I haven't been here in over 20 years.
23 years.
And it's... So it's quite exciting for me after 22-23 years to come here again, and it's been almost that long since I had more than a few hours of association with Krishna
Shetra.
We met each other a couple of times at a few places since those days, but only just practically in passing, once or twice in India and in England. So this is the first time that the chance to be with him for a few days since 23 years, and that was around the time we were traveling in the area. So I was thinking yesterday when the Nama Yajna was going on, I was chanting a few rounds and I was doing a lot of reflecting, and it dawned on me how long it was since I was here. I felt a great sense of well-being, inasmuch as some of the best interactions I had with Srila Prabhupada was in relationship to working here, which was in, I guess, Yugoslavia, Belgrade, Zagreb, a few places, and then later Romania. It was around that time that I was writing Srila Prabhupada about every other week. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj was his servant at that time, and he specifically requested that I would send him, that I would write so frequently. Now imagine the experience of being a writer, probably not an ordinary writer, but one of the joys of a writer is to know that even before your book is finished, that you have people waiting to read it, to receive it. So this was the nature of the Standing Order Project, is that we would send to the universities, to the museums, and to the professors the standing order, or sometimes every book that Srila Prabhupada had written up until that time, and with the idea that any time a new book was written, it would automatically go to them, and then they would send the check for it. So Srila Prabhupada obviously was very happy to know that so many places in the world, at the scholarly level, people were taking the book, and then to hear that they were also eager to receive the new book. So Prabhupada would literally read the letters. When Tamal Krishna Maharaj would tell him that my letters had come, he would literally sometimes just stop everything and he would ask the letter to come in, and then he would read it himself or to whatever devotees and leaders were in the room, And then some of his secretaries would tell me that sometimes, many times during the week, the Prabhupada would have guests. He would ask the secretary to bring forth some of the reports. And then he would have the report read. He was just so excited that scholars were taking his books. And of course we had reviews written and they would say wonderful things concerning his books. Now maybe I'll just tell one or two stories because so we can have time to have a lot of discussions with other Prabhupada disciples. So as I was thinking yesterday, I was thinking how this time in my life with Srila Prabhupada before he left was in one sense my last two interactions with Prabhupada were the best and the worst. The best was the day before I saw Srila Prabhupada. The worst was the last time I saw Prabhupada, where he chastised the hell out of me. And I explained that briefly. But I think Krishna Chaitanya remember we were together, as a matter of fact, the day before the last time. So Srila Prabhupada heard that we had arrived. We had found that he had come from India and was in England and was on his way to America. He was on his way, we call it, to Giranagri, to which one of the projects I'm GBC for now, Vrindavan, Giranagri, Detroit, Zurich, France, Africa, etc. So, but he turned around and of course came back to India, and then later he left his body, came back to Vrindavan. So, when Srila Prabhupada had heard that we had arrived, I think Krishna said we came from East, was it Germany then? From East Germany? Or Austria, we come from one of those countries, we're Austria, East Germany. And Prabhupada heard that we had arrived, and so he asked that we come in to see him. So it was, what we call, the three of us, Krishna Chaitanya, myself, and also Dwarkadish. Dwarkadish, who, maybe some of you, did any of the bodies know? Probably not. Okay. I think he left his body some years ago. And what I can vaguely remember, well, we're 50 years old now, the memory is getting quite bad. So, when we came into the room, Prabhupada was in his quarters, and this was a good part. So Srila Prabhupada, in those days, of course, we would carry him down for darshan. His body, of course, was very weak. He had stopped by everything, eating, sleeping, what they say, mating. Those things stopped a long time ago. So we could see, obviously, he was only working on spiritual energy. And when he would speak, it would be very, very soft. Sometimes it was hard to hear him. So Srila Prabhupada was behind his desk, and the three of us, we came in. Prabhupada mentioned, to summarize, he had thanked us for this service, and I said something in the spirit that Prabhupada, it is only your mercy, you know, you have forced us to do like this. He was appreciating the work that was being done, and now that we were physically there, he was happy to see us. And Srila Prabhupada explained, yes, this is the parampara, that his guru has encouraged and forced them, and he is forcing us, and he goes on and on. So then Srila Prabhupada called me closer, and then he, he embraced me and then put his hand on my head. And so he said very softly, he said, so your life is successful. And so I was obviously overwhelmed, but also feeling, incoherent, because your spiritual master looks so weak, wearing sunglasses, his eyes, some trouble with the eyes, you see his bones practically. And I was writing, and now here to meet the spiritual master after such a long time, and to see the situation that he was in. So the next day, Tamal Krishna Maharaj invited me in to Prabhupada's bedroom. This time we were in his darshan room. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj just wanted me to see, because he had written me several times, asking that I continue sending a letter that I sent him often. He sometimes had described to me how he would share the letters with Prabhupada. And Satyadanya and I think Bhavananda had told me some things. But anyway, sometimes when the letter was read, in the after Prabhupada, in the afternoon, would have his garland and chandan put on. And then they would bring forth my report. It was really a report. It would be sometimes 5 to 10 pages. And somehow Prabhupada would hear the whole report. So a couple of times from what Satyadanya and I think Jaya Prabhupada also mentioned, Prabhupada actually once or twice went into trance. Once, and it was I think about either Greece or Yugoslavia here. And Prabhupada was reading the report, they were reading it to him, and Prabhupada interrupted, and he was saying yes, and the books are going like that, and Prabhupada just went into a trance. So Tamal Krishna Maharaj particularly wanted me to personally to kind of see what the exchange was when Prabhupada was reading the reports that I was sending. So the next day he called me in personally, this time to read a recent report. And I was at that time traveling with Guru Das, used to be a Swami at that time. And the report was, I think it was, well, I can't even remember the country. Anyway, because it was an old report, but he wanted me to read it since I was personally there. Now, keep in mind, the day before, Prabhupada called me in. All the devotees here, that Prabhupada called me in. As soon as I arrived, he called me to come in. Some devotees had heard some things that Prabhupada said. But everyone knew that there was some blessings or something that was given. So I was walking around like a proud peacock. Ego huge. Big in this room. Right? So here, this second day, Prabhupada is in the bedroom in a chair. And Tamal calls me in to personally to read the report. And I read the report. And the whole room and energy wasn't at all like Tamal had witnessed. As a matter of fact, it was the opposite. And at some point, Prabhupada literally interrupted me. And he almost shouted in his weak state, "It is Krishna's mercy. It is all due to the mercy of Krishna." In the reports, I would explain about some of the techniques we were using, about who took the books, and what the situation was, what department they were in, who the professor was. So I was describing some particular situation, and obviously there was ego coming through from yesterday, the day before, maybe even from then. And so Prabhupada just was so heavy in how he let me know that it was Krishna's mercy. And practically, the way he said it just pushed me out of the room almost. I could understand. In the report, or cut it short and get out. And so I literally stumbled through a little bit more and then I got up. So that was the last time I saw Srila Prabhupada. And later he went back to Vrindavan. So it was extremely merciful. Actually, the last day was even greater mercy, because when Guru chastises, that is special mercy, because it means he's calling you out to correct you, to relieve you from problems, anarthas, misconceptions, illusions. So in one sense, that was even more important and more of a blessing than Prabhupada embracing me and rubbing my head. And no, Krishna should remember, but even he was kind of teary. So, I reflect on that often, about this chastisement and how much we want to look close to make sure that as we're doing things, we're doing them not only the right thing, but in the right way. There's another last story that I'll share with you, somewhat similar, but this happened several years before then. We were traveling all around the world, different sets of devotees. Usually two of us or three of us. Krishna Shakti and myself traveled together. And he was just extremely merciful. I mean, I was a very difficult person to associate with. I mean, very difficult. And so when anyone had to travel with me, it was quite an austerity. And You know, sometimes people have this kind of yogi conception more than a devotee conception. That was more like a yogi than a devotee. I would rise at 12:30 in the morning or night and chant the same rounds. I was chanting 42 rounds a day, at least every day. I was eating once a day, still eating once a day, but I'm a little, probably a little more sane. But sometimes my diet was such that for years I was eating like two carrots, an apple, banana, and I think some butter. And imagine, you know, associating with somebody who, that was lifestyle. So, and we travel sometimes weeks and weeks, sometimes months away from temples. The only association you have was with your partner. So you're not with a temple, and then you go out, I mean, you know, you're trying to sleep and somebody's 12:30 in the middle of the night. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. So it's hard to sleep. And then breakfast time, you know, and they doesn't eat with you. And then the lunch time, if he's busy, he just waits and eats at night. So it was like, you know, I was being impersonal in many ways. But I was considering, well, he's selling books and we're having good success. And so I was thinking, you know, results are there. But again, it was not in the right consciousness, and it wasn't a sense of teamship. I would justify it that my party normally would sell more books than the other parties. I would justify that, well, we're selling the most books, so our schedule must be good schedule, etc. So now, what happened, 1 year we were in Mayapur, and all the parties came together. Now we would rotate, two men together for some weeks and then another combination. And so, I wasn't aware of it. I think by this time Krishna Shetty was no longer on the party. We were with Satu Maharaj, was overseeing it. But an interesting thing happened. Sahotra was on the party. You know him. I think he's the only one you would know. And Sahotra Maharaj. And what happened was that we had a meeting in Mayapur, and the topic of the meeting was myself. None of the devotees wanted to go out on the party, wanted to go out with me anymore. And it was devastating because just a few months, a month or two, Srila Prabhupada had sent us these amazing letters, really encouraging the party and offering so many blessings, you know, to the devotees. And then I found out at this meeting that most of the devotees in the party, maybe only one, but I think all except perhaps one, they really wanted to leave the party. And I was the reason for it. So I was devastated. And I had no idea that I was causing so much disturbance, because I was like very stubborn. That was my good quality and my bad quality. And so I was totally oblivious to the fact that I was causing so much disturbance, you know, to these very serious devotees of Srila Prabhupada, to the point that even though they know the service was so dear to him, but to have to deal with me, either directly travel with me or the kind of competition mood that I had set up, it just became overbearing. Now, I was so devastated that, you know, sometimes the mind can cause interesting effects on the body. So my mind was so blown out that I literally got something like cholera, or it was malaria, cholera, some combination. It's because my mind was so weak and so disturbed by this. But I was thinking that I should just go and jump in the Jamuna, or in the Ganges, was it? And finish his life. I was literally thinking like that. Thinking that I'm just a disturbance to these serious devotees. They want to leave. I had no idea that for months and months that I had been, maybe over a year, it had been such a problem. Or years actually, couple years. And it just come to a head. So the devotees were on and live, and they were going on to the festive time. And I was just like a zombie. I was like zonked. I was totally depressed. And just thinking what to do. Maybe I should leave the party. They shouldn't leave. So anyway, a day or two later, Prabhupada had this program at a life member's house, and so many devotees went. And I don't remember the deep details, but I just drug my body here because I knew I was supposed to go. I should go alone. And, you know, we've all had the times when kirtan is going on, class is going on, your body's there, but your mind is somewhere else. So this is my situation. As I was gloomy, frustrated, depressed, my head down practically, I was walking by to the Prabhupada's room. Going outside maybe to chant. Anyway, Hari Sari was his servant. And Hari Sari just happened to see me go by, and he called me. He said, look, I have an emergency, I have to go someplace. Here, Prabhupada will ring his bell. I want you to watch for a while and make sure Prabhupada rings his bell that you go in. So before I had a chance to tell him, look, I can't do anything now. I'm fried. I'm burnt out. I'm depressed. Don't ask me to go before Prabhupada. He had already left. And so I had to stay there and to act as a guard and a servant. So while I was trying to look around to find somebody else to come and to do that service, Prabhupada rang his buzzer. And here I am looking so gloomy, frustrated, going to spiritual master to pick up my mind, and I'm thinking, oh, this is really terrible. I disappointed him, I disappointed his servants, and now he's going to see the terrible condition that I'm in. So when he rang the bell, I looked, I tried to find somebody, I couldn't. He rang the bell again, the buzzer, so I realized I had to go in. So I went, it was two rooms, I went into the first room, then I went into the room that Prabhupada was in. And I immediately dove down and offered full Siddhanta Bhakti. And the room was small, so just as I raised my head, Prabhupada was sitting behind his table. And he took his leg and he propped it up on the table, and his foot was like standing in the face. So, you know, the condition I was in, I didn't know what's going on. My mind was not coordinated properly. And now with my guru, and I'm thinking maybe he's going to give me a big kick or something. I don't know what's happening. So, a night or two before, Prabhupada had an accident where he had rolled out of the bed that he was in. And he had literally bruised his elbow, his forearm, the shin of his leg, and then the insole of the foot. So he had something like a neem leaves, this is a herb, on the desk, and he had put his foot like that. And he didn't say anything at first, but he just pointed. And so he was pointing, and I was, you know, again, bewildered about all the things that's going on, the past going on now. So I could understand that he wanted me to take the neem leaf and to put it on the foot. So I took the neem leaf, and then he started showing me what to do. And so I started trying to massage it on his foot, the insole. But now, my anxiety, my feeling Prabhupada maybe is going to kick me, my depression, and I'm trying to put this on Prabhupada's foot. I'm literally dropping this neem with stains like anything, all on Prabhupada's shirt, on his dhoti. Now the anxiety, I'm suicidal, I'm practically about to cry. But now as I put it on, the insole, and it's just dropping, leaving stains everywhere on my dhoti. And then Prabhupada pointed to the elbow and told me to put it on there. Then I tried to move it over, put it on, and then I started putting it on his elbow, and then I started dropping on the other side of the door. Now I didn't know what to do. You run out, cry, scream, back together. I didn't know what to do. I just couldn't think. So then he showed me to rub it on this part of the leg. So all while this is dropping all on his clothes, Prabhupada is acting like nothing is happening. I mean, he can see it, I can see that it's just all stained, it's silk dhoti, like saffron silk dhoti, just stained, all these green heavy stains. And then he let me understand that it's finished now. So when I went down to offer obeisances, then I had this amazing realization. It was very clear. that Prabhupada was teaching me through this exchange. He was showing me that even though I was doing something wrong, I should do it right, of course, but he was showing me the love, letting me know that yes, I'm engaging you in service and you're trying, but do it right. So I could see and understand that as I was making this mistake and having this service, that it was terrible. But Prabhupada was letting me know, don't commit suicide, don't get depressed, don't leave the party, just do the work in the right way. And so when I rose to go out, Prabhupada was just smiling, just as if I had done something really wonderful. And I'm leaving out the room, and my guru is all staying in his face. So I then could understand and appreciate more and more that it is not just for us to do our services wonderfully or good, but we are to do our service so that it pleases Guru and it encourages others also to do their service. At the end of the day, we all have to offer our services to Guru, to Krishna, to Sadhu. And so we don't want to just be thinking about how we can do something, but we want to do it in such a way that it acts as a way of encouraging and it brings more bhakti to everyone. And in this way, at the end, more service is shared with Srila Prabhupada in general. Maybe just before I stop, I'll just mention how I came to Krishna Consciousness, how I first met Srila Prabhupada. I think this was something we should share. In 1971-72, I was at a university in America. Actually, Lash was considered one of the top universities in the world. Lash University in America, Princeton University. So I was studying to be a psychotherapist, and I was also studying international law. So I had met for some year or two before then. I was just shopping around, meeting all kinds of spiritual personalities. And I take initiation from different yogis, different gurus. Some of them are quite internationally famous. But I had met this one teacher who taught me many things, mostly Raja Yoga, Stanga Yoga, etc. But this teacher always told me that he was not my guru. So once I met one guru, Swami Tricha Moy, I took initiation from him. Then I came back and I saw this teacher who was teaching me, who said he wasn't my teacher. And I said, oh, now I found my teacher. I take initiation, he claims to be an avatar. And so this teacher, who wasn't teaching me, wasn't my guru rather, he kind of laughed. And he began to explain that this teacher is just having a personal realization. But then I said, you say you're not my guru, I meet a guru, this guru, and every time you say, and you laugh about it, or you make fun, or you bring up something. So the conversation went on, and I said, well, this guru says he is an avatar. So this teacher, he says, do you want to know, and he used the term literally, he said, do you want to know who the guru of gurus is? And I said, yes. And then he looked at me very stern, and he says, do you really want to know? Now when he asked me the second time, I got a little nervous. I was wondering why he being so sensitive like this, to make sure that, is this what I really want to know? Then he asked the third time, he says, are you sure you really want to know? And I thought, I'm too far into this now to back away. But I want to be a spiritualist, I've been going to all these teachers. He's been teaching me for about 3 years, and he says he's not my teacher. But now he's asking me this question. So I very timidly said, yes. He said, the spiritual master of the Hare Krishna movement, I like to feign it. I saw devotees once or twice. I saw them once in Boston. It was very cold weather, snowing on the ground, below zero. And it was literally free. I mean, you don't know how cold the weather can get in America, some places. And I saw these people on the corner, and they were dancing and singing. And I just considered, these people are crazy. They got bed sheets on. Got war paint on their face. Mitch Mack tennis. In those days, nobody went Mitch Mack shoes, Mitch Mack socks, everything. And I thought, these people must be taking LSD. But I knew that they had a particular teaching and a guru. And so I was thinking, you mean these people? That they have such high knowledge? My nature was extreme. My nature was that if I found out something, I'd go for it. And so here I was thinking, this is some of the highest knowledge? What these people do? This sort of lifestyle? Now, previously, before then, I was following different gurus and yogis, but it was more in the mood of something extracurricular. My meditations, my mystic stuff. But it was like you had your own life, and once or twice a week, you go to some meetings and you have some discussions, and you do a few things at home for an hour or two, and that's it. So, intuitively, I could appreciate that these Krishna people, it wasn't just a part-time thing, that they had really committed to something in a really extreme sense. Now I'm confused. Here I'm with this person who's been teaching me, who says he's not my guru. I get a few initiations from a few other gurus. He doesn't take it serious. And now he's told me that the spiritual master of the Hare Krishna movement has some of the highest teachings and is the spiritual master of spiritual masters. So what was I to do? To make a long story short, I was thinking, he is lying to me because he wants to get rid of me now. Or there is some truth there, and I have to find out. So literally, I started going to the temple in New York City. I was still finishing my writing some book and before graduation. And so I had a few more months before graduating. But I would go to the temple on weekends and I would stay. But I was just really going just to find fault. I was going to prove to myself that this teacher is probably lying to me, and let me just go and check these people out so I can close this chapter and get away from them and get away from him also. But now, after my first visit, I saw things that I wasn't so happy with, because you know, I've been studying some things for a long time, and I saw that some of the people were not so serious, some were neophytes, some were this, that. But it dawned on me, not with this teacher for a few years, he has never lied to me. The teacher was very unusual. He had all kind of psychic powers. He read minds, he knew the future. So I could reflect and see that whatever he told me in the previous times, it came true. Never charged me anything. For a while I was even a personal student on an on-and-on basis. Sometimes we discussed so many things. He taught me many, many techniques. And so I was stuck. But now, why is he lying to me this time? So I went back to see him, and then I asked him, I said, well, if this teaching is so high, why you didn't tell me that at first? Why you spend months and months and years teaching me all these difficult things? Why you didn't just tell me that there's something higher? He said, well, if I had told you in the earlier days, you would not have accepted it. He says, plus what I've taught you, you will have to use this in the future, so therefore this was to happen. And then it dawned on me, many times in the way he would teach me, he would tell me about, he would tell me something, but then he would say, but Prabhupada says like this, and now we should understand it as Prabhupada said. And I was thinking that Prabhupada was maybe his uncle or cousin or something. And then it dawned on me, oh, that leader of the Hare Krishna movement, Srila Prabhupada, Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. And so I began to realize that all along, he was kind of tuning me in to certain things about Prabhupada. So that's what Satchidananda Maharaj was saying, how when he met this person, what, in Himalayas, was it? And how this person had mentioned that he was seeing Prabhupada as his guru. Well, it was clear to me when I first came to the movement that Prabhupada is even much greater than his own institution. That his institution is his major contribution to the planet, but that Srila Prabhupada's mission and his involvement is in so many, many areas inconceivably beyond our understanding of some of the entities and that he's affected, and his work on this particular planet. His institution is his main presentation, of course. Because his teacher was very close in his moves toward Prabhupada. He later told me he had stopped teaching when Prabhupada came to America. And he even told me how there were some other teachers, Maharishi Yogi and a few others, who also knew something about Prabhupada's status. And they should have, in fact, by his understanding, should have joined Prabhupada and assisted with the work that he was doing. So then Ratiyatra was coming to New York, and I had a chance to personally to meet Srila Prabhupada. Some month or two later, I came back and saw this same teacher. And I asked him some questions in the same mood that I would normally do, sort of like a disciple who wasn't a disciple, but asking questions in the mood of disciple guru. So I asked him one or two questions, and he shouted on me like anything. And he told me, get out of here. He said, don't you ever come back. He said, you have met, and he literally said, you have met Jagadguru, you've met his spiritual master of the universe, and now you're coming back to ask me some question. He says, you're not going to make me an offender. He said, you get out of here and don't you ever come back again. And so I left, and I literally didn't see him for many, many years. And I then, of course, joined the movement. I studied. The more I was studying and reading the books, I mean, I would literally just go to the temple and I would buy three or four books. I would listen to a lecture, but I was just trying to find fault. I was trying to find reason just to run away. And the more I started reading, the more I started hearing, of course, the more I became convinced. And then I read the Sri Upanishad, and it had more information than so many other things I had done, and philosophies I had read, and books and things. And so I became rather convinced in that sense. And of course, at some later time, I saw that teacher. He left the planet now. And as I had accepted Prabhupada as my spiritual master, I was not coming to him in that same kind of reverence, but appreciation. And then later we met up at a few different times, etc. So the essence, the summary of that, is, and I conclude, in my own life, was how merciful Srila Prabhupada was to allow me to come with all of my craziness. Even then I was crazy because I had all of these things, you know, from scholarly background, which is contamination, the contamination from all of this mystical metaphysical stuff. And then I come to him and later take initiation. When I first, the first, very first contact after I met this yogi was even before I physically met Prabhupada. Before physically meeting him, I was engaged. My fiance, we were coming to the temple together. He was a yogi teacher and was as crazy as I was, all of the metaphysical stuff. And so we were buying the books, and she was trying to help me to study, to find fault. So we got this album. The comment, and many of you know the album, one that George Harrison was on, where Prabhupada is chanting, and then later he explains the Maha Mantra. So we were at her house one day, coming from the temple, and we put the album on, and Prabhupada, the devotees were chanting, and I'll end with this. And then Prabhupada started explaining the mantra. And so for lack of a better word, I went into a trance, and hearing Prabhupada's voice. And it was dual. I was very happy because I knew that voice. I knew the personality associated with that voice, even though I had met him in his lifetime. As many of you have had experience, perhaps your guru, many of you have disciples of Prabhupada, first time seeing something just happens, and you just there's a knowingness. But sometimes the voice is that dream, and then they see the person. And so when I heard that voice, I was very happy to connect with that voice. But I was also extremely, extremely sad, because by hearing that voice, it was as if the voice had just jumped out of the album and it put me under arrest. The voice is, somebody has been a criminal, been a deviant, and you captured them. So it's like the voice had captured me, and I understood that my life had to change. And there's a part of me that wasn't really ready to change. But that voice had captured me, and so I was like happy and sad, and I was like going through an unusual experience, like sort of altered state or trance state, and I realized that, okay, now I must find the person, meet the person, the voice, and whatever I was doing before, I have to stop. And so this is my life. Then I took initiation later and started doing different types of services. I think the most significant thing about my story is how Prabhupada is much even bigger than even his own movement, and how there are even other spiritual personalities who have some slight awareness of Prabhupada's greatness, and how we can, as devotees, either disciples or grand disciples, can realize how fortunate we are to be under Prabhupada's umbrella. As I mentioned yesterday, whether we were with Prabhupada when he came on the planet, or some of you come afterwards after him, that this is very significant. When a great entity like Krishna or his incarnations or Nitya Siddhas, that sometimes the stage is set before them, something happens with them, and something happens after. So we all have wonderful chance to be blessed by being a part, you know, the mission of Srila Prabhupada. It is ever alive. The more that we are connecting deeper in our inner consciousness, the more that we connect with him and the entire Prabhupada chain. Iskandar Chandra Srila Prabhupada ki. It was a nice and also moving and strange festival. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Nitya Namine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Sunyavani Asyadhyane Sadharine Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Garadhara Shivasadi Govaktavinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Once a God brother of Srila Prabhupada met him in his apotheca, his pharmacy in Allahabad. At that time Srila Prabhupada made many medicines. One he called Days Pain Limiting. It was something, a liniment. Pain and then a difficult word. Something which relieves from pain. It was a medicine which Srila Prabhupada used to distribute for free to the sadhus who had all the time these small ailments and so on, and it was good for everything. So the God brother asked him, Abhay Baba, Babu, do you also have the medical formula for attaining love of God? Almost like asking, do you only have days, pain, alignment, something like this. Prabhupada became serious and said, yes, I have the formula for getting Krishna Prema. Trinarapi sunichena taro iva sahishnuna amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. Those of you who are interested in this formula can get it translated for you. It works. So, Srila Prabhupada holds a formula in his hands, a formula to become Krishna conscious. Srila Prabhupada's appearance in this world is special. The Padma Purana says a Vaishnava does not take birth under the jurisdiction of karmic laws. His birth and also his disappearance are transcendental. The wise have declared that the servants of Vishnu are eternally engaged in the liberated service of the Lord, and hence are free from the laws of material nature. These great devotees come in this world only, they are free from karma, they are under Krishna's guidance. Krishna sends them and Krishna takes them. They come with one specific goal in their mind, that is to plant in the heart the Bhakti Lata Beach, seed of love of Krishna, which when we have received it, we have to cultivate it to make it to a plant. They mercifully train the conditioned souls, and that's not always a joy for them. At the end of his pastimes, Prabhupada would sometimes cry in the night, being so much sad that his disciples could not really make full use of the seed of the bhakti in their heart. There's a verse in the Bhagavatam which says, which glorifies the work of these great liberals. So the sense of subordination to the Lord. I am such a soul, person who is very rebellious against the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the soul. And Prabhupada, in his compassion, has somehow given some desire in the heart to make use of the gift, the seed of Krishna, of bhakti, which he has implanted in the heart. When preparing for this lecture, I was a little bit in the dilemma, a dilemma which I could only solve now sitting on the chair. The dilemma was, should I tell you nice Prabhupada stories? I have done this in the past, and my Prabhupada stories are exhausted. I've met him 7 times, and I could tell them again and again, always adding a little bit self-praise in them and making them different. But I thought today to talk very seriously to you. 23 years have gone when Prabhupada was on the planet. Do you realize 23 years? Some of you are not even 23 years old. Maybe half, I don't know, one third. Who is not even 23 years old?
Koliko ljudi ovdje ima manje od
23? You are very bloody, very young. Yes, and all the children, of course. Anyways, 23 years is quite some time. 23 years is between the disciples of Srila Prabhupada and Srila Prabhupada's presence. And how will you now make a contact with a person who has 23 years left the planet? Let me tell you an amazing little story to enter this subject. In Nuvindavan, that's a place in America, there some American moods came in, they're very liberal and sometimes liberal. There was some New Age philosophy in filtering our movement due to one person who changed his opinion about Srila Prabhupada. Or I do not know, I don't want to talk harshly. A lot of Christianity was there and so on. And, but the devotees had built for Srila Prabhupada a palace with gold and nice ornaments, which had become a touristic attraction and still is. Busloads of tourists come to see this extraordinary, beautiful building in praise of Srila Prabhupada. So once one ordinary American housewife was going on a tour through the palace and heard a voice from the Vyasa-san, "Take my shoes." He thought, well, out, but what to do with this information? And who said? Then again, "Take my shoes." What to do with this information? I mean, this is very difficult to put into action. Then the group apparently had gone out of the temple room, and she heard this time very clearly from Prabhupada's Vyasa-san, Prabhupada's voice talking to her, "Take my shoes. I do not wish that my shoes stay here." She was, it was a compelling voice. She just looked around if someone is there, and then in her American housewife bag, she put the shoes and felt very guilty because she had become a thief of a religious object. Now the new Vrindavan community came back to Srila Prabhupada's method of sadhana and became regular devotees again. After a travel through time, they were properly situated, and the shoes of Prabhupada's Vyasa-san, which are very worshipable for the disciples, they're still not there. One day the housewife heard again, "Now you can bring my shoes back." And she took the shoes in a typical American housewife bag and brought it to the palace. I mean, no one was around to see. She just put the shoes there and later, talk to the devotees. She asked the question, "What type of personality is Srila Prabhupada?" "He's not on the planet any longer," they said to him, "but he's a great spiritual master." "What? He has talked to me. He is not dead. He has asked me to do something which I never would do, not even in a supermarket I steal. I have taken the shoes, I didn't know why, I never do this, and I brought them back because he told me. He told me to take them, he told me to bring them back." This is one of many stories of Prabhupada's ongoing presence here and of contacting people and helping them. A little while ago, I wanted to write a book collecting dreams about Srila Prabhupada. I have heard many of devotees who are not direct disciples of Prabhupada, who are disciples of Srila Prabhupada's disciples, and having dreams where Srila Prabhupada appeared to them, mostly after reading a book of Prabhupada, and directing them to go and make contact to his devotees. There are many instances where devotees who are not his disciples have profited from Prabhupada's direct intervention in their life. Now this is something which is not unusual in Vaishnavism. We hear, we go a little in our tradition about the great, about Srinivas Acharya, who wanted to meet Lord Chaitanya, but Lord Chaitanya had left the planet when and Srinivas Acharya wanted to meet the associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. For instance, he wanted to learn from Gadadhara Pandit the Bhagavatam. So he went to Puri, and but when he came to Gadadhara Pandit, Gadadhara Pandit's Bhagavatam was no longer readable because he had cried so many ecstatic tears of love that the prince was dissolved. So he was told by Gadadhara Pandit, please go back to Navadvipa, organize a Bhagavatam set, and then I can, or Bhagavatam book, and then I can inform you. So when he and teach you. So when he came back, Gadadhara Pandit had just left by one day. He just left. So Srinivas Acharya tried so many direct associates. He tried, for instance, he went to Vrindavan to meet Rupa and Sanatana Goswami. But as he entered Vrindavan, or as he came close to Vrindavan, 20 kilometers or something, people came crying. And he asked, why are you crying? Rupa Goswami has left.
Rupa Goswami was first.
Sanatana was first and then Rupa. Now the two Goswamis are no longer there. So this night, this was too much for Srinivas. He was thinking, I had no contact with Lord Chaitanya. I had no contact with his dear associates. What is the use of my life? I cannot now learn Krishna consciousness. I cannot become Krishna conscious. I'm lost. I cannot get this treasure of prema. So, at that night, both of the Goswamis appeared to Srinivas Acharya in a spurti. You translate the word spurti as if in a dream. It's not a tamasic, it's not really a dream which comes by in the mode of tamagun. It's like a revelation which is clear from the mode of tamagun. And Rupa and Sanatana Goswami said, Srinivas Acharya, you will learn everything you need to know from Jiva Goswami. It's an example. It's an example where a great soul appears to the devotees who need them and gives them guidance, Bhakta Priya. This is a little important. When you really wish and you are not only a social Hare Krishna person, but you want to get the advantage of a pure devotee. You want to have the advantage of Srila Prabhupada. He can appear to you and give you instructions which can change your life. Please be a little spiritual. Please think a little of spiritual experience. Please do not be just a social member and take advantage of ISKCON only as a religious institution. That doesn't work anyways, you know by now. Please think a little deeply in your life how you can make a contact with Srila Prabhupada. In the tradition it works, and to an American housewife it worked. It can also work for you. Let me tell you of my own experience of dreams of contacting Srila Prabhupada in an ongoing way. The most important way is to contact Prabhupada the way he wanted to be connected. If I want to ask Bhakti Teta Maharaj, you are very, very busy, but I want to have an exchange with you. What is the best way? Then he will say, oh, I already get so much common letters. Can you write me a letter? Or maybe you can phone me. That would be the best way. So he says, this is the best way to contact him. I want a good contact, this is what I will do. I will phone him, even, there are now cheap numbers from Germany, you can dial them, and then a phone call to America is only 10 marks 50 pfennigs. So when you want to have a contact with someone, we should first ask, how does the person want to be contacted? Prabhupada said, you can contact me through my books. He said, I have written this book for the next 10,000 years. In other words, he didn't say, they are no longer means of contact after 23 years. 23 years, nothing in comparison to 10,000 years. So you can read them and get, let me now talk it in a very easy way, you can get a little bit on the wavelengths of Prabhupada. See, if I want to hear a radio emission, I need to come to the right frequency first, and then I hear the weather tomorrow in Pula will be no longer so hot, a little more windy, a little more cool. If I'm on the right frequency, I can hear. When I'm not on the right frequency, I will hear, instead of this clear message, and I have no benefit. So if you want to contact Srila Prabhupada, the first thing is to come on the frequency and get in contact the way he wanted it to be. That is, read the books. 80% of the Hare Krishna members are stated to not read regularly the books. What does this mean? It means they are not really on the frequency and not connected so much, and therefore may not experience such deep spiritual life. But you are the 20%. So please read, keep the 20% intact in your life, or if you are not yet there, come there. When you are now in tune with Srila Prabhupada, you know how he gives his lectures, when you know how he makes his point, when you know the emphasis is in his philosophy, when you know why he differs from other Gaudiya preachers in details, when you have understood why this is good, when you know why his process was not like... when you understand his process, and then what will happen next is you will be able to have this type of experiences where you get direct guidance. Because, see, Krishna is situated in everyone's heart as a Chaitya Guru, the spiritual master within. When he is kind to some fortunate soul, he personally gives him lessons to progress in devotional service, instructing that person as a super soul within and a spiritual master without. Prabhupada is in contact with the super soul, and he can contact you by the super soul telephone. Means a spiritual connection. You will hear about this in the seminar a little bit more, and you will get guidance by him. He might appear also in dreams, if he so chooses, and give you some instructions. Now I will end how Prabhupada appeared in my dreams, and these I consider to be not tamasic dreams, but spiritual revelations. And the last one I will just show you. You know, just like Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj gave you a little background, you have to understand one little background about me. I was an anti-authoritarian thinker, to put it in very polite terms. To put it in drastic terms is I would not accept any authority above myself. No teachers, no father was difficult relationship. And so on and so forth, because I was very frustrated by any type of authority. It was very, very difficult. The first time I visited the temple and I saw Prabhupada's picture on an elevated seat, it took only this one glance from the right eye to understand they are worshipping a person as an authority. I almost walked out in the same. I was paranoid. That was our generation. That was the songs which we heard and which we sang on the roads. That was the anti-authoritarian period in the German youth.
So, I can't say that it was always easy in my discipleship in relationship to Prabhupada. And he was, although we met briefly, but he had to sometimes smash me on the head. And therefore, once I had a very particular difficult time in my spiritual life, and I said, Prabhupada, I'm in this direction of you, and I get to, the next thing I knew, we were on a morning walk with Srila Prabhupada. We were all going behind him, and it was like always, you know, when you wanted to hear what any word Prabhupada said, but there were all these sannyasis around him, and then behind you were others who wanted to hear, and it was, you had to be careful to not step on Prabhupada's shoes from the back, or on the shoes of the sannyasis from the back, and for us little guys, had to really want to hear it. Then all of a sudden, Prabhupada stopped, bang, like he sometimes did to make a point. He turned around to me, said, "So, you want to know something?" Said, "Yep, Prabhupada, how was it with you? Could you always accept your spiritual master in every detail?" And Prabhupada looked at me, and this glance was so honest. It was so real, so compassionate, and so concerned also with my difficulty, that Prabhupada took his stick, bang, on the floor. "I never doubted the words of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur." He said it very strong, then continued to walk. And my dear devotees, you might say, well, this is not such a deep answer, it's one sentence, so why do you make a big point about it? The guru teaches in a very deep way. There's something more than just the words. It's just like in darshan, it's not just an eye exercise. It is something which is going on, an exchange. When he said it to me, it transformed my heart and said, "Yes, and I will not doubt what you say. Thank you." And it was clear. And I had all the things, and it stayed with me. My particular question was solved. This question is very confidential, private. When you will hear it, you will throw me out of the movement, so I don't say it, but it was the thing I'm wrangling with. But Prabhupada appeared, this is the point, and he helped to solve it. It has not come back again. It is gone. Deep faith is there. So, but then you might say, okay, you are a Prabhupada disciple, we are not. How can we have this in our own life? It will work, Prabhupada and Mataji's. There are many, many books, and I might think it would be good to write such a book. The devotees have contacted Prabhupada. But please, before you want to wait for such a revelation, come on the wavelengths of Prabhupada, studying a little bit his books, his views, his perspectives, and so on, and then you will certainly experience this divine connection. The very last dream was very nice. It was a few months ago. I came to Prabhupada in his room. Prabhupada answered two questions. And then Prabhupada said, I will go now on my walk. He said to Prabhupada, "Please, can you take me with you?" And Prabhupada looked to me and said, "But you always talk so much."
Mm.
This is the fact. When I feel very affectionate to someone, I just always talk. I know, but I will not talk one thing. Even if I feel like talking, I will not talk. I will bite my tongue or something. I will not talk. Promise. Then Prabhupada said, come. Then we walked. And it was a wonderful walk. First we walked through the world. We came past normal experiences on a walk, nature, then there was some bathing people in the bathing, how do you say, Badeanstalt, bathing, swimming pool, public swimming pool. We came past that, just past, we heard the noise. And Prabhupada, he took his cane, he said, and now we will go to Krishna. This is how the dream ends. It was very nice. I know, maybe one day I can follow Prabhupada better. Then I know he will say, now we will go to Krishna. Come. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Krishi Gauri jai ki jai, Go Premanandi Hayago.
Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Sarasati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschacari Shatarine Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Jaranha Shiva Sani Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki jai. While we're on the subject of dreams, I feel now inspired to share with you a recent dream I had of Srila Prabhupada, which I was not planning to speak about. Sometimes Prabhupada will come to resolve some internal conflict that we have. And in my own case, as many of you know, I've been involved in academic study now for some years. And it's been actually a constant kind of internal conflict. What am I doing here? Where is this leading me? What is the point? Should I go on with this? Because many devotees find it a very questionable thing. Some devotees are quite sharply critical. Others are very encouraging to me. So it's been an ongoing kind of internal conflict. Anyway, my dreams tend to be not so vivid, and I don't, after waking up, could not recall the details of the circumstances of this encounter with Prabhupada. But the one clear message that came through from Prabhupada, and I'm quite sure it was Prabhupada, it was not my own imagination, that his answer to this concern of mine was, just keep going. Just keep going on. Just continue. It was sort of in the mood, the impression I got was, just keep doing your duty. Prabhupada was very much in that mood, that you do your duty, so this is your duty, now just do it. Don't don't get mental about it. So this was very encouraging for her. This was fairly recent. I wanted to speak about what Bhaktitirtha Swami had described so nicely, this experience that fortunately we could share of meeting Srila Prabhupada and very close to the end of his life. Some of you will be familiar with my perspective on this event as I have told it. One thing I thought is interesting is how much Bhaktitirtha Swami's experience was different from my experience of this particular occasion when Bhaktitirtha Swami was called in to read his report. This was the second day. Actually, I was not there that first meeting. I heard about it, that Prabhupada had embraced you. It was all over Bhaktivedanta Manor that Prabhupada had embraced but the next day, the next day, I was invited to sort of tag along because I had been Bhaktitirtha Swami's assistant for a few weeks, and that was for me, by the way, an extremely educational experience. I learned a great deal about what is devotional service from Bhaktitirtha Swami in those few weeks. And incidentally, I'm pretty sure it was from Austria that we came. We had been driving for several hours back to Germany, to Schloss Retzershof. We arrived there after maybe 12 hours of driving, and immediately we walked in the door and someone told us, Srila Prabhupada is in London. Srila Prabhupada is in London? But then we have to go and see him. There was no question. It was such an amazing, you know, we understood Prabhupada was in India, he was in very serious conditions. Prabhupada is in London, we have to go. So we turned around practically like in some cartoons. You see somebody going and then there's many lines behind it showing how the person went so fast. You know. We turned around, jumped back in the car, and we drove another 12 hours to London. So this occasion came where it was possible to go in and sit in Prabhupada's room. Prabhupada was in a chair, I believe it was a rocking chair, and Upendra, his servant, was massaging his legs. Now at this time Prabhupada's legs were literally nothing but skin and bone. His whole body was like that. And I was a little shocked. I mean, we had already seen Prabhupada, but now I was sitting, you know, maybe 1 meter away from him. And I was kind of sort of staring at his legs as Upendra was massaging them. And his massage was just very, very, ever so gently kind of stroke the legs. And it was so gentle that it was striking me. And I was just kind of watching as Bhaktitirtha Swami was reading his report. At one point I looked up at Prabhupada's face and he had been looking at me. And then from his expression I could later on understand what he was telling me. That you fool, don't you understand that we are not this body? When are you going to learn? Because I was very much in a bodily conception looking at Prabhupada, and he was obviously completely off of that platform. As he was listening to this nice report of preaching activities, then in the course of Bhaktitirtha Swami's report, he was describing, this was from East Germany, sometimes he would describe what we would see, and one thing we would see was people standing outside of supermarkets waiting in long lines to get what they wanted from the supermarket. And when Prabhupada heard this, tears were rolling down his face, and he interrupted. And he said, yes, that is the condition. And he was, what struck me was that he was crying out of a genuine concern for the physical, the material welfare of these people whom he had never met. And he said, because it is a godless civilization, it will become worse. They will not be able to get the basic necessities of life. And yes, there is the mood of Prabhupada in his books, which says the same thing. Many times he would express ideas like this. A godless civilization is bringing about this condition. But I needed the lesson face to face from Prabhupada that Srila Prabhupada was, what was the depth of his compassion? That I was given a little peek to understand what actually was the depth of his compassion. That it was compassion for the conditioned souls, which included their material condition. It was not some theoretical kind of a compassion. It was a full, complete compassion. Anyway, I thought that's interesting that this was my experience, and I really, really don't remember anything of Prabhupada like cutting short the report as Bhakti Tirtha Swami experienced. I don't remember that at all. I remember that he really wanted to hear the whole report, and he was, you know, very, very absorbed in participating in, you could say, by hearing the preaching activities of his disciples. It was very moving. Sachinanda Maharaj asks, how do you explain these difference in total difference in perceptions? I can only say there is a kind of mystical aspect to Srila Prabhupada, and he would simultaneously reveal this different sides of himself to different devotees. I wanted to also convey something of a message of my understanding from Srila Prabhupada's life. Again, something which I think I've communicated with some of you, and it is summarized in the title of the first volume of the sixth volume biography of Srila Prabhupada by Satsarup Das Goswami, namely A Lifetime in Preparation. Over the years of reflection on what Prabhupada was teaching us, and what Prabhupada was communicating to me in the course of my encounters with him, there was one theme was dominant, and that theme was that Prabhupada was very soon going to be departing from us, and therefore we should prepare ourselves to continue our spiritual life without him. Many times Prabhupada would say, I am at the fag end of my life, I may leave any moment, so how are you going to continue? That you must be prepared for. I won't go into other details of how I experienced that with Prabhupada, but this last experience was definitely one of them. Prabhupada came to London literally to say goodbye to us. He was saying, I'm going now, so now you have to be prepared. But A Lifetime in Preparation, this title of the first volume of the biography of Prabhupada, for me is very meaningful and something we can all imbibe. We know the history. Prabhupada spent many, many years of his life in India. And it was this very nice perception of Satsarupa Maharaj that this was a lifetime in preparation for this incredible culmination of his life, which we are all the legacy of. We are all continuing to participate in that culmination of a lifetime in preparation. And at the same time, we have this opportunity of spending our lives, however much of it is left, preparing, and this is not to say delaying, but continuing the preparation to go back home, back to Godhead for ourselves personally, but also preparing ourselves to become fully qualified contributors to this legacy of Srila Prabhupada. And for me it's always an inspiration to go back and think of Prabhupada's life in India when he was younger, when he was very young, and then going through college. I try to picture this situation of Srila Prabhupada, Scottish Church College in Calcutta. I've visited this place more than once. For me, the kind of real life situation of Prabhupada amongst his friends when he was young in college, it was a time when people were agitating for independence, Indian independence, and Prabhupada was participating in that as a kind of revolutionary himself. I like to think of these times and circumstances of Prabhupada before he came to us. And so I want to share with you, and again, some of you will have already heard this, a very short one-act drama which I wrote. This is some years ago I wrote this, and I'm a little embarrassed that I haven't been writing more such dramas. A more recent one I did was about the creation of the Bombay Temple, but I won't read that, it's much longer. If you'll bear with me, I'll just read this short play called I'm Leaving. And I also, by way of introduction, have to say I wrote this, I wrote this before this trend in our society developed to appreciate perhaps more than was appreciated in earlier years in our society, the feminine gender, the ladies of our movement. And so some of this may sound a little harsh, but I'll just read, and please bear with me and perhaps appreciate it. I'm referring here to Srila Prabhupada as Abhay. Abhay Charan was his given name, because this is taking place in an encounter between Srila Prabhupada before he took sannyas, encounter with his wife. His wife's name was Radharani, incidentally. Abhay says, addressing his wife, "Where is my Bhagavatam? I had it on my desk this morning and now it is not there." Radharani Mataji, Abhay's wife, says, "Your Bhagavatam? Yes. Well, yes. You see, actually, I took it this morning to Mr. Chakrabarti down on Chaurangi Road at the bazaar." You've heard this one before, haven't you? Abhay, Chakrabarti? Who is that? He is interested in Bhagavatam? You mean to say you are preaching to someone? This is certainly an occasion to celebrate. The wife says, forgive me, Prabhu, but I must tell the truth. I traded your book for tea biscuits. Abhay. He's incredulous. He's shocked. Tea biscuits? The Srimad Bhagavatam for tea biscuits? Foolish woman! You are not in your right mind. His wife says, oh, I know I'm foolish, but what can I do? There were no more tea biscuits. And with your business going so badly, there is no money. And besides, it was an old book. Prabhupada, old book! Old book! Yes. I see that for you the Srimad Bhagavatam is nothing but an old book. That most sublime literature, the very incarnation of God in book form, full of the nectarian pastimes of Krishna, the ripened fruit of the entire Vedic literature, this book for which I would give my life, you have given for some snacks to go along with your nonsense tea drinking habits. His wife said, so what is your wish? You want your wife and children to live like ascetics in the forest while you spend your time with your writing and preaching? Do you know what the neighbors say about you and your writing? They say, oh, Abhay Babu is only writing religious things. He is only thinking about God. Then who will maintain his family? What am I supposed to tell them? I know the neighbor ladies joke about me behind my back. They say, she married a Vaishnava preacher who can't make ends meet, who cannot pay the bills. What does she expect from such a husband? Prabhu, why do you have to be a missionary like this? Who cares for your Bhagavad Dharma anyway these days? Why can't you just be a good, pious Hindu husband and take care of your family properly? Is that not pleasing enough to God? You are not even making endeavor to get your daughters properly married. Abhay, I did what I could for them. I made arrangements, but no one accepted. If you don't accept the arrangement I made, what can I do? What makes you think everything depends on me? What if I died tomorrow? Does that mean your daughters would not be taken care of? No. Krishna would take care of them as he takes care of you and me and every living entity in this universe. Cooperate with me to take initiation from my Guru Maharaj, to assist me in this most important mission, to spread Krishna consciousness. Everyone is rotting in this material world because they have forgotten Krishna. People must be given a chance to understand the purpose of human life. They must be given Krishna. That is the conviction of my Guru Maharaj. That is my conviction as his servant. And this should be your conviction as well. But you refuse to take interest in this devotional service to Krishna. You refuse to accept initiation from my Guru Maharaj. and you refuse to help me. You want me to be a good so-called Hindu husband. But why you don't be a good wife and assist me? Whenever I held a Bhagavatam reading with friends, you disappeared into the back room, showing a bad example for the children by drinking your black tea. You could just as well come and hear from our sacred books, but no, you prefer this nonsense tea drinking. And it's not that I haven't provided for you. I've provided you with maidservants. I've provided you with cooks. But when I sent for a servant to come to Lucknow to assist me with the factory, which is after all meant to make money to maintain you, you insist on keeping me in Calcutta, keeping him in Calcutta, while you and the children simply eat and sleep. I have worked all these years to maintain a family which up until now has not become attached to devotional service. This is my great misfortune. As far as your daughters are concerned, I've done what I can. Beyond that, it is up to you and them. I will have no more part in this marriage business. That's it. Finish. The wife starts crying. You don't care about us. I care about the order of my Guru Maharaj. If you don't care about that, then I don't care about you. Obviously, you don't care about my Guru Maharaj's order, as you have so blatantly reminded me by selling my Srimad Bhagavatam, the only copy I had. What more is there to say? I'm leaving. And his wife says, oh yes, leaving again. Always leaving. Leaving, then coming back. Then leaving, then coming back. And she exits the room. Abhay, reflecting to himself while he's packing his clothes, my Guru Maharaj came to me more than once in dreams, beckoning me to leave home and take sannyas. And each time I was horrified, thinking, why is he asking me to take sannyas? But yes, now I can see. Krishna is being so kind to me. He is taking all these material encumbrances away. Yasya ham manugrinami harishe tattanam shanai tato adanam tyajantyasya svajanaduka dukitam. Krishna says, whenever I feel especially merciful, mercifully disposed towards someone, I gradually take away all his material possessions, his friends, relatives, then reject this poverty-stricken and most wretched fellow. I've been a householder now for 36 years and have performed the duties of a householder to the best of my ability. Still, although I have tried my best to train them in Krishna consciousness, my wife and children are not taking to the process. But this must be all the arrangement of the Lord. Now, I can understand the wisdom of my father in choosing for me a wife to whom I would not become overly attached. In the present circumstances, it will be possible for me to give up all these householder affairs and concentrate fully on fulfilling the order of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. There is no more point for me to carry on in householder life, which is compared to a deep, dark well which contains no water. Yes, now is the time to take full shelter in Krishna, to go wherever I can preach the message of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But where shall I go right now? to Vrindavan, back to Jhansi. Anyway, Krishna will reveal some soon enough. For the time being, let me simply pass and leave. And this time, I will not come back. Krishna has his plan for me, which he will reveal if I simply surrender fully to him. Then his wife enters the room again, and she says, "Where are you going?" Abhay says, "Back home, back to Godhead." The wife says, "Where?" Abhay says, "Don't bother, I'm leaving." The wife says, "Anyway, you will be back." Prabhupada says, "No, this time I won't be back. Hare Krishna." He goes out the door and leaves. Then the son calls out from the back room, "Mata, your tea is ready, but I can't find the tea biscuits. Where did you put them?" No answer. "Mataji, where did you put the tea biscuits?" And the wife, she's distracted. She answers, I'm coming. And that's the end of the play. Srila Prabhupada. So the little point I want to make is a lifetime in preparation. Srila Prabhupada, in this little episode, which is based on what Prabhupada has relayed to us of his life, Prabhupada reflected on his own situation very carefully. He took this incident of the Bhagavatam being sold as a kind of final indicator. Now is the time to really make his move to prepare for his mission. But it was a mission which he was preparing, ongoing throughout his life. Similarly, we are making preparation, and sometimes it's in fits and starts. In our individual lives, we sometimes don't see the big picture. Sometimes our vision may get a little bit more like tunnel vision, and we may have our personal difficulties. And so many obstacles will come in the course of our lives. But if we can keep this bigger picture of the mission, as Srila Prabhupada always kept throughout his life, then we can be successful. So I'll end there, but I also wanted to mention, I wanted to express the fact that it has been my good fortune, and it's been really a result of this that I'm still here. We heard this very strong statement from Satchinanda Maharaj yesterday, how it may very well be that 10 years from now many of us will not be here for one reason or another. I feel fortunate that I'm still here, and I'm still here because of my godbrothers especially. And I realize three of my godbrothers who are here today are godbrothers with whom I've had opportunities to travel and preach. I've always been the sidekick, the assistant. And for me this is the right position to be in. Satchinanda Maharaj I've been able to travel with for some time, altogether what, maybe 1 year we were together, and I learned a great deal from him. Before that I was the assistant of Vaidyanath Prabhu, Satchinanda Swami's brother. We were traveling doing Sankirtan book distribution and record distribution in Denmark, and this was also very helpful and educational for me. Vaidyanath Prabhu was always completely fixed on the mission of Srila Prabhupada, and this was a great inspiration for me. I think we spent a night in jail together. This was part of the program. And of course, Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, I had the very good fortune. Actually, it was quite rigorous with Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj. As he commented, he had a very rigorous program, which I couldn't keep up with. But he was so tolerant of me. I mean, everything, he was just always encouraging, that's all right, that's all right. And not only that, but he was very systematically wanting to educate me. He was training me to become like a member of this library party. These were like the green berets of Prabhupada's mission, the crack team of book distributors. And one thing he showed me was what it means to be fearless and what it means to take a risk for Krishna. He was always ready to just do the impossible. I was always the one to say, Maharaj, I don't think we can do that. I don't think we're allowed to go there. Maharaj, I think we have to first get permission to enter that building. And Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj would say, anyway, let's just try. And every time, you know, Krishna, it was like when Vasudeva took Krishna across, left the jail, you know, the demons would all be asleep, no one would see. So lots of mystical things happened in the presence of Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj. But it wasn't just, I'm convinced he has mystic powers, but it wasn't that so much as the devotion he had. He really wanted to please Srila Prabhupada, and he was always writing these reports every night. He'd come back. Some of the places we were staying were a bit strange, but he would just sit and write his report, and he would also get us out of scrapes, out of danger. One time we were in the University of Leipzig, and one professor we were speaking to said, oh yes, these books, they're very interesting, but I think not for me. I believe the best would be you go to Professor such and such in room so and so. So we went to room so and so, thinking, oh, we've got a sale coming up. And where had he sent us? He sent us to the university police. This is, you know, pre-1989 East Germany, if you can understand what that means. And so, there, within a couple of minutes, we understood what had happened. We were in hot water. And Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj just so amazingly got us out of that hot water just by his smile and he just apologized to these policemen from the depth of his heart. He said, we're so sorry, we didn't know. You know, there are so many different rules and regulations in all these different places we go to about what you can do, what you cannot do, and I mean, we're very sorry, we didn't know that we're not supposed to be here. We're very, 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 very sorry. And I'm sitting there going, and I'm nodding my head, yes, we're very sorry. Because I was the translator. That was my main service, was translating into German. And in the end, these people were just so disarmed. They were completely pacified, and they just said, "Okay, that's all right. That's all right. That's all right. Just go somewhere else. Don't come here. You go somewhere else. Okay?" "Oh yes, we'll be very happy to go somewhere else." And then I think we got out of there, and then Maharaj, you know, he's just so transcendental. We got out of there, but then he said, "Actually, maybe we can just go in that building." And I said, "Maharaj, please. This is, we have to leave here, okay?" "All right, all right." Srila Prabhupada ki jai. His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Thakur ki jai. Srila Prabhupada Avirbhav Mahamahotsava ki
jai.
Lord Premanande.
I'm leaving early tomorrow morning. It's around 5 o'clock or so. I'd just like to thank you very much how nicely the festival was organized, and it's just so, as I said, exciting after 22 years to come back and see so many Vaishnavas. I think you're all fortunate that you have these leaders to be able to help to guide you in your Krishna consciousness, and this is such a unique type of way of devotees coming together. You're having a kind of a naturalistic environment. It's fun, it's cultural, and at the same time educational. And I think also the fact that there is so much diversity is really a sign of how powerful Krishna consciousness is going on in this area. We all know so many of the secular problems that have been going on the last year, the last couple of years, and the different places that you've come from. And we can appreciate even more why spiritual life is the real answer. Other things, they disappoint us in all different kinds of ways and times. But ultimately, Krishna will never disappoint us. So we really hope as you spend the next couple of days that you take more advantage of the association, that you try to connect more with each other, and you stay very much in touch, that you learn a lot from what is going on in the different preaching areas, and that you try to focus on the things that you heard, you know, in the different seminars. And each time that you come, we hope that next year there's even more devotees coming, and that the devotees who do come, that they come with greater sense of realization and greater strength. And if the organizers invite me, I'll be happy to come once a year. We certainly want to thank you very much, Maharaj, for coming here and making a deep impression in our festival and our Krishna consciousness. And we wish you a Savitan Put, that means a good way, a good journey. And please to come. I'm of course not an organizer, I'm also a guest here. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much for coming to this Prabhupada evening. I personally think we should close the evening here because some of us have been had two late nights, and I wish you a lakunoch, a good night, and see you all back tomorrow. Srila Prabhupada ki jai! Sisi Gonitai ki jai! Sisi Dada! Kodya Vihari ki jai, ko premanandi hari hari bol.